And can you talk a little bit about some of the issues that come up when you use ruxolitinib in this situation, particularly patients unlike her who do start out with cytopenias?
Oh, it's such a challenge. I do agree with my colleague who bemoaned low platelet counts. It is really a challenge. You know, with anemia, we can always transfuse, we can try ESAs, we can try different things to try to mitigate the anemia while on ruxolitinib. But you really feel like your hands are tied when it comes to thrombocytopenia because you have someone with a platelet count of 30, you put them on any dose of ruxolitinib, you know their platelets are going to come down, they're going to be sensitive. So there has been two published studies looking at dose escalation in patients who are thrombocytopenic. Two older studies. So there was one, a pilot study out of the Cleveland Clinic, as well as a multi-institutional study that was published, a phase two, where both studies started out at a very low dose level and kind of worked their way up, either five every other day in one study or five twice a day in another study. And basically, as you start on these very low doses, you give your patient a month, and as long as their platelet counts are hanging in there, you go up to the next dose. You can escalate by 5 milligrams a day once a month is what those papers were looking at. So start out at 5 milligrams twice a day. You do well for a month. You go up to, say, 10 milligrams in the morning, 5 milligrams in the evening. Watch it for another month. Make sure the platelets don't take a huge plunge or you run into bleeding complications. And you kind of work your way up to the point where your platelets start to teeter a little bit or you're starting to see significant symptom burden and spleen size improvements.
What do we know at this point about the long-term impact of ruxolitinib on these patients, particularly in terms of the underlying disease pathogenesis?
Yeah. So in pooled data from the COMFORT studies, in pooled data that's for long term, so 5 to 7 years of follow-up with these folks, we see that there is a survival advantage for ruxolitinib. Now, they've done some fancy statistical modeling that might suggest how long that survival advantage is, but the truth of the matter, there was crossover in these studies, so you don't have a precise number. You can only estimate what that will be. But for all indications, what we typically think of as disease modification, you're either killing off myelofibrosis cells or reversing scar tissue in the bone marrow. We don't see those things on a routine basis happening with these patients. When you take them all in aggregate, things are about the same. But clearly, what we're doing, we are disease modifying because these patients are living longer. But it's likely through reduction of cytokines, improvement of symptoms, perhaps improvements in performance status and functional status. There might even be some kind of thought about somehow cooling off extramedullary hematopoiesis and the effects that that could have on end organs such as kidneys or lungs. So I think it kind of tampens things and cools things off. But as far as going in and killing myelofibrosis cells, reducing fibrosis scores or the mutagenic potential for clonal evolution over time, we're not really seeing that on a consistent basis.